So let's begin with the Makoros, and then we'll see how they flow, and again, if time permitting, we'll discuss some of the external or meta issues. So the first question, which comes right out of Chazal and Mishnayos and Gemaras and Toseftas, is the question of whether women are obligated to chal in the mitzvah of Megillah, and then the question is, even if they are, how does that relate to the obligation of men? So the Gemara, Sugya in Megillah, Dalet Amud Aleph, tells us the name of Rav Shua ben Levi, very famous din, that Mikra Megillah is one of those mitzvahs which women are chayiv in, despite it clearly being a mitzvah seish of Angrama, because nevertheless, af hein hayu ba'oso hanes. And therefore it seems as if women are obligated in Mikra Megillah. The Yerushalmi, which we will get back to, this may be an important source for us, the Yerushalmi actually says in Megillah that Amar, I think it's Bar Kapra, if I remember correctly, says, Tzarech likrosa lifnei nashim. Not that women themselves are obligated in Mikra Megillah, but rather it's the man's obligation to make sure that a woman hears the Megillah. That's not the Nusach in our Gemara, but it is the Nusach in the Yerushalmi. Later on in the Masechet, in Daf Yutes Amud Aleph, back in the Bavli, the Mishnah there says, Hakol ksheirin likrosa es haMegillah. Now we're not talking about who's obligated, but who's eligible to read the Megillah. Hakol ksheirin likrosa es haMegillah, chutz mei cheirish shota v'katan. But obviously, missing from that list is a question of nashim, and the question would be what to be medayik from the absence of that statement. Two more sources in Chazal. We're just kind of giving the bullet points, and then we'll try to see how the Rishonim analyze, synthesize, and interpret these various sources. One more source in Chazal, and that is a Gemara in Masechta Erchin on Daf Lamed, excuse me, Gimel Amud Aleph, which tells us, which really asks the question, which should be obvious, which is if we just originally saw the women are obligated in Mikra Megillah, so what do we need if Hakol Chayavin in the Megillah, because of Afin Ha'ibos Ha'anes, so the Gemara asks, why do we need to now say in the next Mishnah on Daf Yates, Hakol Ksherin Likros of the Megillah? Right? Hakol Chayavin Mikra Megillah? Hakol Ksherin Likros of the Megillah? What's all this Hakol for? You know, whenever we've seen this many times in Gemara, when you have a statement like that, right, why that seems to be coming to exclude something. So it's the Gemara, La'asuye Mai. So here the Gemara is explicit. La'asuye Nashim. And then, again, quotes from Shubin Levi, then Shubin Levi, Nashim Chayavs Mikra Megillah, Sha'af Ein Hayeba Osa Hanes. But the key point here in the Erechin is it has bridged not only that women, because of Afin Haba Osa Anes, are obligated in the mitzvah, but they are also ksherin likros, right? That just seems to be the simple reading of the Gemara in Erechin. I can't say it's explicit mea achuz in the Gemara, but it's certainly the simple reading of the Gemara. Hakol ksherin, hakol chayavin, hakol ksherin, and la'asuye nashim. Certainly seems like that's what the Gemara is saying. One final source, and then we'll get to the Rishonim and figure out what to do with all this, and that is the Tosefta. The Tosefta says again in Megillah in Perek Beis, Hakol Chayavin in Vikriyat Megillah. And then after listing all sorts of people who you might not have thought were Chayav, but yet Kamash Lan would say are Chayav, Hakol Chayav Vikriyat Megillah. The Gemara then says, "Nashim v'avodim v'ketanim peturim ve'ein motzin es harabim." So on the one of the Tosefta joins together both obligation and eligibility to read, but the Tosefta is against everything we've seen until now. The Tosefta says that women are exempt, that they are putter, and therefore obviously they're ineligible. So it seems like we have in Chazal a whole group of sources which, you know, you put it all together, you seem to have one view, and then you have the Tosefta, on the other hand, seems to disagree. And that is pretty much the way most Rishonim understand this chulent that we kind of started with. That's how they make clear of it. The Rashba in Megillah, the Ritva, others basically say, yes, you have to understand this Tosefta. It's coming against everything we saw until now, the Mishnah and the Gemara. And not surprisingly, say the Rishonim, when you have this Machlokes, all these sources on one side. The Tosefta on the other side, who do we paskin like? Obviously the cumulative majority of the sources, and that's against the Tosefta, which again seems like right now Hakol Chayovin b'Mikra Megillah, and not only that, Hakol Sheirin Likros the Megillah. The Rambam, when he brings this down in Megillah Perek Aleph in the beginning, says Hakol Chayovin b'Kriyasa. Everyone is obligated. That's the first sources we've seen. And it's clearly that he's including women to be obligated, Rabbi Shua ben Levi. And then he says, and who can't read the Megillah? Only the Chereshota v'Katan. So he doesn't explicitly say that women can read, but he doesn't exclude them. And the same sources said Hakol Chayavin had also said Hakol Sheirin. So it's not implausible. One second, Asali. And the most explicit, I think, or one of the most explicit, is Rashi. Rashi in Erechin says what, again, I think is overwhelmingly mashma anyway, but Rashi in Erechin says clearly, what does that mean, la'asuyei nashim, shachayabos b'mikra megillah, uksheros l'krosa u'lahotzi, zecharim yidei chovasam. You cannot be more explicit than that. Women are obligated in the mitzvah, and they are eligible to read and to be motzi others, including men, in their obligation. You have a complete equality in a complete identity emerging of the chiyuv and the eligibility of reading, just like men who are obligated are able to be motzi other people, women are obligated and evidently just like men, and therefore so too, women are eligible to be motzi other people, and not only other women, but other men as well. Yes, sir?
He wants to say the Rambam also says that when he says the kriya stop, that's reading.
Yes, could be. I'm just saying he's not as explicit as Rashi is, but I don't think it's a machlokas. And I think this is the majority of Rishonim. I mentioned the Rashba and the Ritva. Rashi, you know, is even more explicit. The Rambam, there's others, a Meiri and Rezarua, et cetera, et cetera. Now, perhaps we should just end the shiur right now, game, set, match, and kind of wonder how come, you know, our lived experience seems to be so radical from all the sources. Right? Why is this even controversial? It should be obvious based on the sources we've seen that women could not only read a Megillah for herself or for other women, she could read for men, she could read in the shul. That's what it seems to emerge if we would stop the shiur right now. So what changes the entire sugya is one opinion. It's brought down in more than one place, but it's pretty much all one opinion, the opinion of the Bahag. As is often the case, the Rishonim, for the most part, again, I'm not a historian or a academic, but I, as far as I'm aware and my own experience of learning, it seems like the Rishonim did not have the Bahag. We now have Baruch Sheh Zachinu to live in our door, so we have lots of manuscripts that Rishonim didn't necessarily have. We have, you can find in the library, maybe even the Beis Medrash, but certainly the library, Sfarim that have now been published based on manuscript of the Bahag. But the Rishonim all seemed, I'm not sure that they had that. I think, it's always my impression, was that that's something that was not always available to Rishonim, but they had Masoras of what the Bahag said, and we often have the Bahag being quoted. And he often is against everybody, and I don't have an explanation for this, other than apparently he was amazing, he was the Bahag, but often, when even though he's against everybody, Halacha is concerned, Machmir Mekel, but for him, right, just as something that you're already familiar with before we get to back to our topic in a second, right, all of the twisting ourselves in a pretzel and all the complications of Sfiras Omer. If you forget a day, do you have to remember? What if you remember at night? Am I in? Am I out? All that stuff. And the reason that you've grown up learning that, well, if I miss a 24-hour period, I can't say anymore, but maybe I can say without a bracha, all that stuff, it all comes because Shulchan Aruch was koshish for the Bahag. For all the other Rishonim, it seems to be a no-brainer, no-brainer that even if you missed a day, 2 days, 3 days, okay, so you missed. And chas v'shalom, if you didn't do a different mitzvah 1 day or 2 days, would you say not to do it the next day? Ma kesher. The answer is because the Bahag made that, and we're, despite the fact that everyone's against the Bahag, so I'm sure someone maybe wrote a PhD on the Bahag, maybe someone could tell me other examples of this. But it seems at least, I know of at least two, I'm not sure if two makes a pattern, but it's close to it. That's my focus, right, if two is a chazaka or not. So maybe we're at a chazaka. But either way, Sfiras Omer is one example, where the Bahag changes everything because of our concern for him, so too in the sugya. How so? So, Tosfos there in Megillah, the one in the Gemara we started with, Tavdalid, as well as the Rosh in the beginning of Megillah, both quote the Bahag as disagreeing with everything we've seen until now, meaning even though women are obligated in hearing the Megillah, because of Afein Hoyevos Vaneis, they cannot be motzi men. Even though we say HaKol Ksherin, that according to Bahag did not include women, or at least not include them for reading for men. We'll have to see about reading for each other, but it certainly did not include, according to the Bahag, reading for men. It is not explicitly clear, at least initially, what the rationale for this should be. Let me say this way. There's two questions which I want to spend the next good chunk of time on. What would be the makor for the Bahag? Hard to understand the Bahag in light of the makoros we've seen, right? The reason there was such an overwhelming consensus implied by many Rishonim, explicit in some, was because if you put all the sources together, other than the Tosefta, but it's an overwhelming, right, a majority of sources seem to be against the Tosefta, so that seemed to be the obvious conclusion. So where did the Bahag get his Shita from? Right, that's not at all clear in terms of a source, but more than that is a Svara. Even if I know some source that said it, but then you still want to know what's the Svara of that source. Right? Why should it be? Right, if women are obligated, don't we usually say, you know, just imagine men, right? If people are obligated on the same level, so then they can be motzi each other. Right, a child's only obligated to rabbanon, so the child can't be motzi. You know, we have these issues all the time. But why shouldn't it be? So one possibility, at least in terms of the source, one possibility is, and I've seen this suggested, it's not my own original idea, it could be that the Bahag is really based on the Yerushalmi that we began with. Because if you recall, the Yerushalmi, even though the Yerushalmi has this idea that women are obligated in Megillah, but the Lashon of the Yerushalmi was Tzarech Likrosa Lisnei Nashim. Dafka, that men should read for Nashim. They're obligated to hear it. But it's clear that men are supposed to read for them. So it could be that this is a source for the Bahag, and it may even telegraph, perhaps, a Svara for the Bahag. But whether that's the source or not, it's not 100% clear. But I'm aware of six different theories in Rishonim and Achronim for what could be the rationale of the Bahag. So let's see if we can go through those. And then once we figure all those out, we'll figure out what we should actually be doing or not doing. So one group of Rishonim sees the problem with women reading for men as completely external. That doesn't mean it's not important, it's not legit, but it's not internal to the issue of the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah, and that's how they understand all the sources. That is to say, everything you've seen until now is Megillah and just Megillah. The Chi of Betorah's just Megillah. It's an internal Megillah, Purim issue. And Echanami, Mitzadad, Afaynoy Basanes, there wouldn't be a problem. So how come the Bahag is against it? Satosis and Sukkah, and the Ritva and Megillah, and the Smag all suggest variations of Kavarat Tzibur, Zilu Bei Milta. I can't be sure, but it's certainly possible that those are all different ways of saying Tznius. It's just not appropriate for a woman to be having such a prominent thing in the way that she's leading a mixed group, men in shul, etc. It's just not bakavatik for the Tibur. Maybe that's sneas, maybe it's a little something slightly different. But that's basically what they say. Zila Beimilta, Kavod HaTibur, things like that. And Echanami, Mitzad Megillah would be no problem. That's one group of Rishonim. A second theory is suggested in the Sefer Kolbo, when he quotes the Sefer Itur, who says a different theory, which is Kolisha. Again, it's not a Megillah problem per se, but if she's, how do they say it in English? She's chanting, right, the Megillah, with the cantillations, right, with the tune, with the ta'amim. So, you know, it can be very very pretty, and maybe that's a violation of Kolisha. Now, by the very fact that the first group of Rishonim that I mentioned didn't say this, and I already told you there's going to be altogether six, which means there's five different Shitos in Rishonim Achronim who don't give the Kolisha answer, you can, I think, reasonably deduce that all the Rishonim who didn't give the Kolisha answer is because they don't agree with it as a Svara. And this actually, if I recall, I think Rav Avadya has a tshuva on this, where he makes this point that it seems very, very difficult, very, very dachuk, to say the problem is Kolisha. For example, we know, if you've learned Megillah, the Sugya in Megillah on Daf Chav Gimel, that Mi'ikra Adin, or originally, it's not clear if this ever happened, but at least theoretically in the Megillah it says the woman could lain. Right? Woman was kosher for Kriyas HaTorah. So there we say not because of Kavod HaTzibur. We don't say because of Kolisha. So you tell me you like the tune of the Megillah better than Kriyas HaTorah. Right? That does not seem to be convincing. So this Kolbo, the Sefer Itur, seems very, very difficult. Again, it's out there. I'm sharing with you. But it seems very, very difficult. Yeah.
Is there a principle somewhere in here?
Yes, Ravadia mentions that. Excellent, excellent. Right. Now, usually, when we have a place where the Shechina is already, we're not worried about it. Yeah, and Hanami. It's a very interesting thing, which I can't say that I'm... First of all, it would take us off the topic too much. But even if I don't want to use that excuse, I can't say that I'm sufficiently, well-versed in all the cases and the nuances to try to figure it out. But I will say that it does seem to be somewhat paradoxical that there are times where we say, or we have certain makoros that indicate, as you said, that dafka, once we're ready, our mind is in a kedusha mindset, we're less worried because we're already insulated because we're in a kedusha mindset. It's not a treatistic environment. We're in a kedusha mindset. And at the same time, there are makoros, and I think lots of common sense, that say, adaraba, the more kadosh the environment, the higher the standards. Right? This was a big theme of the Rav, actually. Rav Schechter, I think it's in one of the Svarim, speaks about, again, you don't need Rav Schechter or the Rav. I think it just makes sense. I think there's a lot of mainstream sources about extra levels of tzniyas and kedusha, dafka, and shul. Certain things that might be permitted out of shul, and might be permitted in shul, v'chule. Now, that's a little bit, right? It rubs a little bit against what you said. But nechanami, there are makaros in both directions. So how do you, in a broad sense, figure out a way to navigate that? I don't know off the top of my head. And even if I did, we wouldn't have time to get into it. But yes, that is, if I recall, I believe Rav Avadja in the Chayi Chavadat is one of the reasons he doesn't like this Sefer HaKolbo. Okay, those are two reasons. And the common denominator of those two, aside from the fact that they're all from Rishonim, so they deserve our respect, but the real point is that both of those reasons are external, non-Purim, non-Megillah reasons. All of the other reasons that we will see have the potential benefit of being more internal. You understand why, if it's an internal limitation, that makes it potentially stronger. On the other hand, in our sugya, the obvious problem with any of the internal svaras is going to be they're more dochuk in the sources. Because in all the sources that we saw, which were actually dealing with Megillah, whatever svara we're about to mention, we didn't see it, right? Unless we can all of a sudden go back and rediscover it in the sources. The advantage of saying that there's external reasons is then you don't have to do, you just say Enechanami, all those makaros that we saw until now were about Megillah, but there's other sources, that, right? Enechanami, me did Megillah, would be okay, but we have other values. If you can tell me it's a Megillah problem, so on the one hand, in theory, that makes it a more compelling svara. On the other hand, then how come it's not in the Gemaras? So that's something just to keep in the back of our mind. So in Rishonim itself, we have one version of this, which is perhaps the most well-known version, and I would say based on manuscript, because I think this is now in the Bahag, I think in the published Bahag that we have, I think this is confirmed, but this is also, even before, again, I don't think that they had that as far as I know, but both the Tosus that I previously quoted and the Rush, again, who quoted the Bahag, so they give a theory which is the most well-known, which is that the Bahag was very Lomdish, which if you know anything about the Sfiras Omer stuff in the Bahag, we also assume that the Bahag was very Lomdish. All the Brisker Torah on Sfira, a lot of it comes from how do you understand the Bahag. So to hear, but it's already in Rishonim. The Rishonim suggests that the Bahag distinguished between Mikra Megillah and Shmias HaMegillah. When we say Af Hein Hayib Osa Hanes, it means that women are obligated to hear the Megillah. It does not mean that they are obligated to read the Megillah. Aye, the Gemara in Erechin said, HaKol Ksherin Lekros, and a Chanami. Maybe that's women reading for other women. But to read and be motzi men, that could only have been based on their original Chiyuv, and Afein Hayu Ba'osa Hanes does not mean, which we've been assuming until now, it does not mean, as we've been previously assuming, that because of Afein Hayu Ba'osa Hanes, men and women have the same obligation. Women would have been totally exempt. Comes along Afhain and says they're obligated to remember the miracle by hearing it. They're not obligated to be, so to speak, mafarsim, if you will, by reading it itself. And therefore, you would add a habamina that they can't be yotze unless they've heard it from a man. Kamash mulan hakocha ksherin lekros, women can read for other women. But not, according to this, that women could ever have read for men. That's how the Bahag, again, do you see that in the sources? Is it a little bit dachuk? Yes. But again, if you want to give an internal, again, this is my only ha'ara I have. Most of the shir is not any of my chidushim. I'll just give you the makoros. If you want to call this a ha'ara, maybe it's not even, maybe it's a ha'ara leh. So I'm just stressing and I'm reiterating that in echanami, the reason that the Rishonim are trying to be matzik to fit this into the Gemara is because on the one hand, it's very compelling. You're giving it an internal reason. It's a Purim reason. It's a Megillah reason. On the other hand, well, shouldn't that have been in the Gemara? And their answer is, as much as possible to make it in the Gemara. Yeah.
Does this opinion allow women to read for other women at all? Because presumably their kriya has no chafakta.
So they say that's the havamina. That's what you need the erchin to say hakol sharon for. Yes, that is the chiddush and chanami. It's a svara. Now, as it happens, not only. Now, by the way, we started in the beginning of this year. I mentioned that we had in the Yerushalmi, right, with Tzarech Lekrosa Lifnei Nashim. This works for that. Maybe that's the Makor of the Bahag. I don't know. Right? Because that Makor talked about Chiyuv, but it was clear about women listening. Moreover, the Mordechai, we know the Rosh's Chavrusa, the Mordechai, when he brings down the Bahag, he claims that the Bahag had a different girsa than Erchin, not that Hakol Ksher and the Krosa, but rather Noshin Chayavos Bimashma Megillah. So if you have that Gemara, so then now it's not just a Svara, but you have an actual source. So again, whether you can fit it into our Gemaras, whether there was a different girsa, or whether it's just a Svara, you know, a speculative svara to make, to be matre. Oh, yeah, don't worry about all those sources. That was all talking about shmiya. But to read for other men, there's two dinim, and those gemaras are talking about shmiya. There's another din called kriya, and women are not obligated in that. Yeah?
It wouldn't make sense going back to that source if not obligated in shmiya, then they wouldn't be able to do any kriya at all then.
Again, that's what he just asked. That's what he asked a minute ago. Again, so the answer is, maybe you could have argued that. What these Rishonim in their theory are suggesting is that I'll say it this way. The story you're both giving is not a bad one. For example, even according to Shitas that say that shofar, it's a similar hakira by shofar, right? Is the myth of shofar blowing the shofar or hearing the shofar? So one of the proofs they try to bring to say that there is a mitzvah to blow the shofar, is we have halachas about who can blow. And if we didn't care about the blowing, we only cared about hearing, so I heard, who cares who blew? Right? So what's the answer? The answer is the svara you're both giving, which is, even if the mitzvah is to hear something, doesn't mean that anyone's eligible to produce the sound. Right? So a goy or something like that who blew, it doesn't have the din of a kol shofar. I heard something, but I might as well get a trumpet. It doesn't have the din, the chalos of a kol shofar as is produced by a bar chayuva. Right? That's more or less what you're saying. And that's what some achronim say in the parallel sugya of shofar. So what would be the why don't the Rosh and Tosfos agree with your svara? Because basically what they're saying is you can't compare. And a chanami, if a woman would read Megillah for a man, that's the mamash equivalent of him a goy blow the shofar, an eved blow the shofar, something like that. Even if she reads perfectly, it cannot create the halachic requirement that they need to hear. But if she's reading for herself or for another woman, so then she can create a lower level reading. But the lower level reading is enough because they share. Again, we have this in other areas of halacha. You're familiar with this, right? This is, ubiquitous. That when can one person be mosi another? What's the condition? If they have the same level of obligation. So just like the woman reading is only chayiv and shmiya, so she can create a type of reading that is sufficient to help another woman who's only chayiv and shmiya. Could she help a woman who is obligated in kriya, a man who's chayiv, or in theory, if you could create a woman that was chayiv in kriya and shmiya, She also couldn't produce that. It's not about gender. It's about she can't create a level of reading that's enough for Kriya and Shmiya. But for other women who are only Chayav and Shmiya, her reading is sufficient for that. Okay, that's the difference. Let's just move on. I want to quickly tell you three different interesting razzle-dazzle lumdasha things from Achronim, and then we'll quickly zoom back to Halacha Lamaisa. And hopefully keep on schedule to get the whole topic done before Maariv. So three other approaches. So we've seen three in Rishonim. There's also three in Achronim. The Avnei Nezer says there are two dinim in the Mitzvah Megillah. Pirsum Hanes, and then Zechiras HaMolek. Right? Sort of speaking of the Asei Tov and the Sur Meirah, if you will. Remember the good that happened to us, but also Zechiras HaMolek, you know, incidentally gets schlepped into the Purim story, as we know. Therefore, says Avnei Nezer, women are only obligated in the Pirsum, right? Af Hein Hoib Asaneis. That certainly sounds like a Lashon of Pirsum. And Echonami says Avnei Nezer, women are obligated in that. But there's a second din called Zechiras HaMolek. And that's a big discussion. That's the big Parshas Zohar discussion. Are women obligated in that also? And the Avnei Nezer assumes that women are potter from Zechiras HaMolek, presumably, perhaps because, I shouldn't say presumably, perhaps because Zechiras is connected to Mechia, and maybe women are potter from the battle. Whatever the reason why women might be potter from Zechiras HaMolek, the Avnei Nezer assumes that. And therefore, again, it's not the Kriya versus Shmiya Chiluk, but it's the same idea, which is that the men's obligation is multifaceted, and a woman shares part of it, but not all, therefore she can't be motzi a man. Similarly, the Marcheshes. The Marcheshes is a name that's probably less familiar to you. Maybe some of you have heard of him. Reb Henoch Egis was a Rav in Vilna. The Rav knew him personally. We have, I think, at least one, if not more, of the letters in the Sefer Igros Brit Halevi are from Rav Soloveitchik to the Marcheshes, Reb Henoch Egis. Incidentally, he was at the time a vociferous critic of the Brisker Derech. He's very critical. In his Hagdama, he mentions it, not by name, but he's the new Derech, the new popular Derech, the neo-Hasidus of his time. He was against. I think I heard somewhere, I don't know if this is true, it's too good to verify. I'd rather just assume it was true, that was, you know, in his younger years, but then in his older years when he met the Rav and shoes with the Rav and learning, that somehow he mellowed his criticism. I think I may even heard that from Wolfenstein, but again, if you really care about the truth of history, you'll verify it. I just prefer the story. Anyway, but either way, that's the Marcheshes. It was a big dion in first part of the 20th century in Vilna. And his Marcheshes, he also says there's two dinim. What are the two dinim? Different than Avnei Nezer's. Pirsumei Nisa, that's similar, and Halel. Right? The famous Gemara, why don't we say Halel on Purim? Three answers. One of the answers is Kriyusa Zuhi Lula. Right? The Kriya of Megillah is a form of Halel. And therefore, suggests that there's two dinim. Megillah does both. Women are chayiv in the Pirsumei Nisa, Afein Hayi Basu Anes, but women are part of from Halel. Halel is Mrs. Asesh's Man Grama. Just because women are chayiv in Mikra Megillah, and they might be chayiv in Mishloach Monos, other things, but Halel is different. He assumes based on the Gemara in Megillah, Daf Yadalid, women are potter from Halel, and therefore, again, you could make a chiluk. There's actually two more, but I'll, for the sake of time, I'll only mention one last one, and this is Rav Soloveitchik himself. I believe in Hare Kedem, they quote this from the Rav quoting his father. If I recall correctly, I think I first saw this quoted, if I remember correctly, there's a paper that came out the year after, I got to YU the year after the Rav died, or less than a year. I came in, you know, Elul, Lemisparam 1993, and that's the Rav had died on Pesach of that year. And sometime, I guess, the next year, YU came out with a memorial paper called Zichron HaRav. It was actually co-edited by Rabbi A.B. Schmidman, who's Eli's brother-in-law, Eli Weber's brother-in-law, Rabbi in Philadelphia, and Rabbi Jeremy Weider. They were the two editors. So Rabbi Willig's piece in that Sefer is about, I can't remember what the title is, I haven't seen it inside in many years. I think it's about Afein Hayav Osanes in general, not about women's Megillah readings. That's definitely not what it's about, per se. But it relates. But it's about, I think, Afein Hayav Osanes, I think. And there, Rabbi Willig quotes this chiddush that he also heard from the Rav, and then he goes to his own analysis, questioning, answering, adapting, mechadesh, etc. So there's a few different places you can get this, you know, cliche-y, that in the name of the Rav, and I think it might also originally ultimately have gone back to the Rav's father. And that is even a more subtle nuance. We're slowly, you know, getting more and more refined, but it's the same idea. Again, to dinim, there's a difference between Pirsum Hanes and Zecher Hanes. Uah, as Rabbi Williams might say. Uah. Just because women are chayiv af hein hayi ba'osa hanes, maybe they're chayiv in one, maybe the pirsum, but not necessarily the zecher. Either way, again, however you move around the chess pieces, we've gotten to the same conclusion, which is that according to all of these last approaches, the Rishonim's one of the difference in mikra versus shmia, or all three of the achronim that we shared, but they all share the same common denominator, which is that Megillah is a multifaceted, complex mitzvah, and even though women are obligated because of Afein Hayibos Hanes in one aspect of it, they're not necessarily obligated in all of it, and the Mela, therefore, they have a limitation in being Motzi the men. Now, let's zoom back out for a second. Let's not lose sight of where we are. We spent the last, whatever it was, 10 minutes, I don't know, more, going through six different shitos to explain one shita, who's called the Bahag. But that doesn't change the ultimate dynamics of the sugya, which is that the Bahag is not the majority view. The Bahag is decidedly the minority view. The majority view, implied by certain Rishonim, explicit in other Rishonim, is that none of this is true. That women are obligated, just like men, therefore Memela, Hakol Chayav in the Megillah, and Hakol Sheir in the Krosa. So how do we paskin, given all of that? So sure enough, the Shulchan Aruch says, "Kosis Siman Tuf Reish Pei Tesi Bet." Shulchan Aruch says, "Chayru Shor of a Katan cannot be motzi." Stop. Implication, obviously, being that a woman could be motzi. V'yesh Omrim, though a woman can't be motzi a man. Obviously, the Shulchan Aruch starting with the position of most Rishonim, and v'yesh Omrim for the Bahag. The question is, when you have two Deos and the Mechaber, who do you paskin like? So the Ben Ish Chai, Parshas Tetzaveh, we're 1 week off, Kaf HaChayim, both assume like the Yesh Omrim. So the Shulchan Aruch is being machmir mamish for the Bahag. Out of deference to the majority view, he quoted it, but he was ruling like the minority, he was ruling like the Bahag. However, Rav Avadya, this is in Yechav Adas, in multiple places, and the current Rishon LeZion, his son, in the Yalkut Yosef, also discusses this. He says, usually, actually, it's the opposite. In general, we say that stam v'yishomrim, halacha ke stam, but, so if the halacha is like the stam, so why did the mechaber bring down the yishomrim? So says Rav Avadya, because l'chachila, even though the halacha is like the stam, l'chachila, you should be machmir for the yishomrim, or for all the shitas, unless it's your shafat chak. Now, of course, you know, you could now quibble and analyze what's called Shafat Chak. I mean this not at all provocatively, even though it is provocative, and I certainly don't mean this sarcastically. If a woman would say that she feels totally disenfranchised by her inability to read for a man, is that Shafat Chak? You know, what defines Shafat Chak? I have a feeling that would not be called Shafat Chak. But I could also see somebody arguing it. I imagine Shafat Chak would be according to Rav Avadya. Let's say you live in a weird place which there's no man who knows how to read, but there is a woman. Could she read for everybody? So I think Rav Avadya would say, even though Yesh Omrim that she can't, and we try L'chachila to be machmer for that, but even if there's a Shafat Chak, right? I think that's probably closer to what the Shafat Chak is. But again, obviously the definition of Shafat Chak, you know, is somewhat elastic. Again, I think my first hypothetical is, in my own opinion, too far to go, but, you know, it is still not precise, that's for sure. The Ramah, after all this, the Ramah, but, you know, doesn't explicitly rule, but by implication, the Ramah does seem to be clearly also being machmir. How so? And not only does the Ramah seem to be machmir, the Ramah seems to be machmir for one of the six interpretations we saw, specifically. How so? Because the Ramah says, what happens when a woman is reading for herself? What bracha does she make? And the Ramah famously says she makes the bracha of lishmoa. Now where would you get lishmoa from? Mechatesi. Only one place. Tosus and the Rush in their interpretation of the Bahag. So So with that one, you know, takes less than a sentence for the Ramah to say that. But now that we have the background of the Sugya, halacha b'yin, we see what the Ramah is doing. In one fell swoop, in less than one sentence, the Ramah is basically saying, not only are we mimachmir for the Bahag, I'm accepting this interpretation of the Bahag. It's not kol isha, get out of here, it's going to be kol isha. It's not sniya, zilus, abedina, kavara tibor. It's a din, shmira versus kriya. A woman is only obligated in shmira. And therefore, even when she's reading, that's not how she's being yotzei. She's being yotzei for what she heard, which, by the way, is exactly parallel to the way certain Rishonim and Achronim talk about shofar. They're so convinced that the mitzvah is shmiah, even the Baal Tokeah is being yotzei, not because of that he blew. He's being yotzei because he heard. He happens to be the one who blew. But the reason he's being yotzei is because he heard. So too says the Ramah, even if she's reading the Megillah, she's being yotzei because of shmiah, therefore she should make the bracha of lishmoah. Okay, so bottom line is, I'm not aware of, and I hope that this is not only a statement of the past, but a projection for the future. That's my own bias. I'm not aware of in any number or in any way mainstream or legitimate Orthodox situation, you know, in history where women have been reading for men. Maybe someone could dig it up in a museum, in a library, in an article, in a footnote. I'm not aware of it. And even if you find me an example, it'll be the exception that proves the rule. Again, I assume that there are certain egalitarian minyanim that do all sorts of things throughout the year, not just on Megillah reading. Okay. But, I apologize. I don't mean to be disrespectful or I'm not certainly not making it personal. I don't consider that mainstream orthodoxy, so my statement remains. It is striking, and again, I'm not hiding it from you, it's striking that that consensus, which has now existed for hundreds and hundreds of years, emerges out of the minority view. But that's the hashkacha. That's how it ended up coming down. That's how the Shulchan Aruch paskins. That's what has been done, and that's what I think should continue to be done. What, of course, is much more practical, and in certain communities even pressing, is not the question of women reading for men, but women reading for other women. Okay? And that's what we have, hopefully, about 15 minutes to try to cover. So, if you go back and how we started, the Tosefta, Erchin, right? Erchin said, Hakol Ksherin, Lasuyei Nashim. So we thought it might mean even Lasuyei Nashim reading for men. Even if we take that away, you got to leave something, right? The Gemara has to mean something. If it doesn't mean that women can read for men, what it mean? It must mean that women can read for women, right? That's the pashtus. The shir's not over yet. But that's sort of the pashtus, right? And even the Tosefta, which again, the Tosefta was against everything, right? We said we're passing against the Tosefta. Tosefta seems to say women are not even chayav. Women are b'chol poter. But the Tosefta had said, and not only are they poter, ein motzin et harabim. So presumably a rabbi, out of a rabbi, your rabbi presumably includes men also. But again, I don't know if the Tosefta is relevant, because we don't postulate the Tosefta. So within the world of the Bavli and those various Gemaras in Megillah and in Erchin, it certainly would seem, if I just did Daf Yomi, but I knew about the Bahag, kind of a funny combination, I would think, okay, maybe women can't read for men, but why can't she read for other women? So the answer is, maybe yes, maybe no. There are a number of interesting shitas, both in some cases Rishonim and in Achronim, which prohibit women from reading from other women. The Karban Nesanel, that's one of the commentaries right on the bottom of the Rush. So the Karban Nesanel, the Rush is quoted the Bahag, the Rush didn't just quote the Bahag, the Rush gave what we are accepting as the authoritative interpretation of the Bahag. There's a chilek in Shmiya and Kriya, if you recall, that's why women can't read for men. But the Karban Nesanel, when he quotes this, he assumes that the Bahag even prohibited women reading for women. If you don't want to hold like the Bahag, don't hold like the Bahag. The Karban Nesanel is not argued, that's a separate point. But if you're going to hold like the Bahag, says Karban Nesanel, get it right. The Bahag was not only prohibiting women reading for men, but also women reading for other women. Now, how do you get that? How do you fit that into the words? So this is based, says the Karban Nesanel, interestingly, not on the Rush, but on Tosfos and Sukkah. Tosfos and Sukkah was one of the people who said, as you recall, in the beginning of this year, that why can't women, what's the svar of the Bahag? Zila Bei Milta. It's not respectful or tznius or whatever you want to say. It's not Bukovodik, call it that way. It's better than tznius. Tznius probably wouldn't work in this case. So what's the pshat? He says, that whole svara of the Bahag, listen to this, you have to listen carefully, the whole svara of the Bahag, which he thinks is Zilei Bei Milta, but we don't have to accept that, but His point is, when the Rishonim were this and that, interpreting what the Bahag means, it was always and always and always only about women being motzi, other women. Why? Because he says it was pashut to the Bahag that a woman couldn't be motzi a man. Why was it so pashut? Because he says it's so obvious that there's a chiluk between Shmi and Kriya. Right? I understand why you're not obviously convinced by this, trust me. I'm just telling you what the Halakha of Korban Nisanal says. Therefore, he says, a woman can't be motzi a man, Kriya versus Shmiya. And again, that's what gets reflected even on the page of Shulchan Aruch with Ramah. But she can't be motzi another woman, because that is Yila Bei Milsa. Now, Korban Nisanal, you know, we have great respect and reverence for the Korban Nisanal. It's hard to understand what he's talking about. And in what sense is it zila be milta or not kavadativa if a woman reads for other women? It kind of begs the question, which I don't know any of us have a clear or definitive answer for, which is, how do you define zila be milta? Right? I tentatively suggested a half an hour ago, whatever it was, 20 minutes, maybe it means something like tznius. And I think in the context of a woman getting up in shul and reading for the whole community, that's very plausible. But it's harder to explain that for why she can't read for other women. So the Korban Nisanal still thinks that the reason is Zilah Be'Milta, but how do you understand the concept? It's not all, or at least not fully clear to me. Moreover, others have pointed out, Rav Henkin in the Chuvas B'nei Banim, Rav Hertzlankin, he points out, it's a very, very difficult reading of the Bahag. And he points out, based on other Rishonim, and the Bahag himself, and other Makaros, that it seems to be a tortured reading of the Bahag. It seems clear that the Bahag was not just assuming it's a davar pashut, but that's the whole chiddush of the Bahag, and that was limited to men, women and men, and doesn't have anything to do with just women. Yeah?
Would you wish
Rav Yehuda Hertzlankin, that's the grandson, who's alive. Again, unfortunately, he's not in great health, but Shavu Refu Shleima, doesn't be well. But this is the grandson, who has tshuvas called tshuvas b'nei banim. So it's very, very difficult. Lamaisa, it does make it onto the page of the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah says, in our Siman, Sifkat and Zion, a woman can be motzi one other woman. So it's clearly not a technical issue, because then she can be motzi anybody. But this is some kind of zila be milta, even in a big group of women. So one other woman, maybe you'll quibble and say it's two, but some group of women the Mishnah Berurah is against. And in the Shaar Tzion, he makes the point, one yes, but not many, based on the Korban Nisanal. Again, I admit, me guttle from the Chafetz Chaim, Mishnah Berurah, but, you know, in the Sugya, it's a very difficult position. You know, it's only from the Korban Nisanal, and the Korban Nisanal is a very speculative svara, and may not even work with the sources. Yeah.
Even if you say women can't read for women, then you wouldn't make the claim that the Chavetz Chaim, svara the Chavetz Chaim thing, you could say the opposite, that for Siminissa, it'd be better for small women, because then you get a Siminissa.
Correct. So, and which is, again, that's probably good. So I go back to what I said when we were starting the whole various interpretations of the Bahag. Some of the interpretations are internal, some are external. What you just said is an internal one, an echanami, which is why he says it's not one of the internal ones. And the internal ones, you could argue, it's not only okay, but you said maybe even better, the more people. But the Korban Nisanal would say, yeah, but there's an external problem called zila be milsa. It's just unbecoming, I guess would be my English translation for zila be milta. Why? He's mainly going with that. He's saying, why can't she be motzi men? Maybe Shmiya versus Kriya. But she can't be mostly a group of women, which sounds like, if I recall correctly, he defines anything more than one other, based on the Korban Nisanal Zilah Be'Milta. That's one reason why a person might claim, even based on strict halacha, there shouldn't be women's Megillah reading. A second svara, or source that's brought out, perhaps even more commonly quoted, is from the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham, problem in quotes. The challenge, if you will, is that the Magen Avraham is not based on any of the sources we've seen until now, which we can understand, because all the sources we've seen until now seem to be pointing one direction. So how does the Magen Avraham turn his back on everything that we've seen until now? Because he quotes the Medrash HaNelam, which if I'm not mistaken, I believe maybe some aspect of the Zohar. It's certainly more of a Kabbalistic source. Again, this gets into the whole meta topic of halacha and Kabbalah, but it should be obvious if you spend any time doing Mishnah Berurah in particular, or other earlier poskim, Arizal and other similar sources are quoted all the time in halacha context. It would be very, very hard to maintain a Chinese wall distinction between halacha and Kabbalah, because it's quoted all the time in halacha. So Lamaisa, despite all of the nigla sources leading up to the Magen Avraham, he's machmir, and not based necessarily on a Karban Asanel, but on the Medrash HaNelam. And the Medrash HaNelam seems to say not only can a woman not be motzi other women, she could even read for herself. I'll read you the Lashon of the Magen Avraham. He says, Ubemedrash Nelam on Megillat Rus, Kosov, the lo tikra la'atzma, rak tishma meha anoshim. Now the Chai Adam quotes this same Medrash HaNelam and thinks the woman could read for herself but not for others. Anyway, the bottom line is it's not clear what the svara of the Medrash HaNelam is, or why that should beat out all the other sources. But Lamaisa, the Magen Avraham said it. The Magen Avraham is obviously a very, very consequential posek. Right? This is Lamaisa. This is one of the things which comes up a lot in halacha, which is, again, the more in depth you learn the halacha, the more, if you don't learn the halacha in depth, you wouldn't even know to ask the question. You wouldn't even know the phenomenon that's occurring. But when you have either minority or more esoteric, less typically authoritative sources, in and of itself, you probably would never even know about them, let alone be choshish for them. But what happens when a very prominent, authoritative, mainstream source bucks the system and quotes the one minority source, or the one esoteric source, right? That's what we have happening here. If I would ask you in a vacuum, do we have to be choshish for all the shittas of the Medrash HaNelam and Megillas Rus? Right? You would laugh me out of the Beis Medrash. But could a good Jew go against the Beferish Magen Avraham? That's not as simple. That's not as simple. Yeah.
It's possible that Magen Avraham isn't taking a measure by itself. He's looking at that, and he's also looking at the minority position of the Hag and Korban Asano.
Could be, yeah. Do me a favor. It could be. I didn't take a look at the Magen Avraham today. You can take a look. It's Simon Tuf Reish Pei Tes, Sif Kut and Vav, or if it's easier for you to remember, 689, Sif Kut and 6. Now, all of that is maybe there's a Karban Asanel, there is a Magen Avraham / Medrash HaNelam. Of course, on the other side of all of that is the Pashtus of the Bahag. Now, what would be a halakhic argument if you're not persuaded by the Medrash HaNelam or the Magen Avraham or the Karban Asanel? Are there good halakhic arguments to be against women's Megillah reading? And the answer is yes and no. I think it's very hard to make, what would be the arguments? So I would say that the arguments could be made of the benefits of Barov Am Hadras Melech. I didn't write down the Makoros here on this in my notes at the moment, but there are clear Makoros, nothing to do with women, about men, strongly, strongly preferring people go to larger Megillah readings rather than smaller ones. A big discussion. There's even a havamina that the Mishnah Berurah quotes from earlier poskim that maybe if you have a city with multiple shuls, maybe all the small shuls have to fold in and have just one communal Megillah reading because of Rav Avraham's Melech. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes, no, we don't say that. Although the Mishnah Berurah does go to town explicitly on house minyanim. I don't know about you, but almost every neighborhood I've ever lived in, there are some people who dafka have a breakfast and a house minyan reading of Megillah, sometimes having 50, 60 people. It's not 10, but it's not the shul, and I find it to be unconscionable to do that. I hope no one of your parents do that. But it's the feirish, that would be a violation of Rav Am Hadras Melech. So there's no question, I would think in a typical situation, certainly in a communal situation, that the Rav Am would be the communal Megillah reading, which, given that we're machmer for the Bahag, is going to have to be read by a man. So a woman is clearly, who chooses to go to a woman's reading, is clearly going to be choosing a much smaller, more private reading. So that would be, potentially, either you call that a halachic argument, a meta-halachic argument. But it would be something. I wouldn't call that politics, chas v'shalom. That's a real halachic slash religious value, the benefit of being in a minyan and all the things that happen with that. Maybe the brachos afterwards might be impacted on if you have a minyan or not. There are issues. Lamaisa, I will just say as follows, because we're going to run out of time if I don't get cut to the chase. There are situations that we know of, certainly Baal Peh, I don't think anyone doubts it, of poskim mastering women's readings. I can't give the shir here without acknowledging that I think it's pretty undisputed that Rav Aaron did. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I think Rav Aaron only did it once, as far as I know. And it wasn't to Megalos, because I think this even predate Megalos. And it was to what's now known as Lindenbaum. Again, if I have the facts right, if I don't, maybe someone who listens to this will correct me, but I'm not intentionally manipulating the facts. I just might be wrong. But I think that's the facts. We'll get to in a second why maybe you would distinguish between a seminary and a community. But in that context, I believe he did give such a hefter, and I know whether they asked Rav Aaron or not, there definitely are other seminaries, I think at least two others that I'm aware of, who assume either other poskim gave them the same hefter, or based on Rav Aaron, they also do have Megillah reading by women in their seminary. What I think is not well known at all, but I will share with you chapter and verse, is that Rav Avadja seems to explicitly endorse it. And he's not necessarily talking about seminaries or not. This is in Yabia Omer Chelek Ches Simin Nun Vav Os Dalid. Says Rav Avadja, he's quoting Rav Menashe Klein, the Mishnah Haluchas, Ungvar, who, no shock to anybody, he thinks it's 100% Chazer Treif. Of course, a woman can't read the Megillahs. Why could she even read? I mean, that's already a chutzpah. You have to know where he's coming from, for sure. Again, big tzaddik and big Talmud Chacham, but, you know, anyway. But Rav Avadja takes them on. Rav Avadja quotes the Mishnah Halachos, who's ma'arer al minag ha'noshim sh'osos minyan b'fnei atzman l'kriyas ha'megillah she'lasos kain. He calls it a minyan. That's sometimes an explosive word. But whether you call it a group or a minyan, but women doing it, so Menashe Klein is against it. Says Rav Avadja, quote, uma mechilas kvot aroso, ein devar mechuvarim. He's wrong. Adaraba, yesh le'odeid ha'minhag hanal. Now, as far as I am aware, that is further than Rav Aaron went. I never got to, again, I am a klisheni shlishi revi at best. I didn't speak to Rav Aaron. I'm not pretending that Rav Aaron's told me anything. But from what I understand, he allowed it. I don't get the impression that there's any written or oral record that he strongly encouraged it, that he preferred it, that he thought it was tafka a good thing. In that circumstance, he allowed it. And there are people, including Rabbeim, the yeshiva, who claim that they spoke to Rav Aaron, and that he was clear to them that he felt it was dafka a seminary, not necessarily for communities. Now, I can't speak to that. You know, I don't know what he meant. That's how I've heard it quoted. Now, there are people who say, what's the difference? And from a strict halachic perspective, it would be hard to argue that there's a difference. Right? What the Medrash of Nelamo is only talking about seminaries, but not communities. If you're going to be machmir for the Karban Nefanel or machmir for the Magen Avraham, it's hard to make a distinction. If that's Rav Aaron meant, and there definitely are other Rabbanim who might say that position, what would be the Svara? So I think it's actually not a bad Svara at all. You may even be able to put it into the Karban Nesanel, which is to say, clearly, if a person is in a self-contained community of women, now there's only one phenomenon that I know exists called a seminary, right? They daven by themselves. They have quote-unquote women's tefillah every day. Right? It's not a statement. They're not shunning the shul to daven only with women. That's their community. So if you have a community which is pretty much, you know, all women anyway, i.e. a seminary, so there you could say it's not such a problematic thing to, so to speak, shun, you know, it's not like you're in a brovam and you walked away from it. If you're in a shul, you always go to shul, you do everything in your community, to tadavka one night a year, one morning a year, to choose not to do that, so then... I want to be clear, I'm not even getting into the issue of what's in a woman's heart and her motivations. I'm not saying that's not ever legitimate to ask, but I'm saying you don't even have to go there for this. Even if she has the most sincere motivations, this is one of the mistakes of our generation, in general and in the parsha of women's issues, is good motivations does not necessarily make good policy, even if they have the most pure motivations. But if you're in a community where you have opportunity to hear from someone who's clearly chayiv, you have no sheet that's saying you it's wrong. And you even have the benefit of Barovah Mandras Melech. To avoid all of that, because again, I don't want to speculate, but whatever legitimate impulse a woman might have where she would want to hear from another woman. Even if you make that in the best case scenario, you could very strongly argue that that's the halakhically wrong thing to do, because you're missing out on other cumin and other benefits. On the other hand, maybe, I'm not saying I'm convinced of this, but maybe within a seminary environment, you haven't, quote unquote, walked away from your usual community, you haven't walked away from a natural opportunity of brovam and a minyan, b'kulei b'kulei, it's just your natural davening environment all the time. I could hear it. I could hear someone saying it's both mussar, I could hear someone saying they're both usser, but I could hear, I admit, I could hear. Now, what other factors might there be, and we're going to end in a minute, I'm rushing, but this is, even though there's much more to say on these topics, on the last factors I'm mentioning now, and it's the last factors that usually get most of the attention, but I'm happy the way it worked out, that 98% of the shiur was in the Makoros. Not that these are illegitimate or not real, but just to mention what other factors, in addition to what I just mentioned, of Pirsumanes, Barov Am, and other real halachic internal Megillah factors, there's also the issue of slippery slope, which I think is an absolutely legitimate halachic concern, right? Again, the slippery slope is slippery to apply. It's not, you know, that could be in the eye of the beholder. That's why you need a posek. But the idea that you would ridicule even the phenomenon of a slippery slope, if it's mutter, it's mutter, who cares what it could lead to? And no one says it that way, but people sometimes ridicule poskim who are concerned with a slippery slope. So that to me is obviously legitimate. Again, I don't have time for it now, but this is, you know, asus yag Torah, ashol mismerish, this is from the Torah itself, through Ashonim, Achronim, this is part, this is about as mainstream Jewish halachas you can, policies you can get. Now, what counts as a slippery slope? When should you be machmir? That's not so poshut, clearly not. But could I see a posek saying, yes, everything we said until now is correct, but I'm still against this because it'll be associated with X and Y, which is bad. Even if right now the people have no interest in going further, but it's just an inevitable slippery slope, it's going to lead, once you do Megillah, you're going to do Kriyas HaTorah, I could see that very legitimate. Even if I don't think it's that, but it's strengthening a movement which I think is not according to the Torah, I can hear that too. I can hear all those things. It happens to be that my Rebbeim pretty much say some combination of all those. So I was never in a shul, not in Baltimore and not in my current community in Ramat Beit Shemesh, where there's any push for women. I don't know if you want to say Asher Zachiti, or just, you know, I know how to pick them, or I got lucky, whatever you want to say.
That wouldn't go over
somewhere. The Maisa, I have to be honest, I never was in a position where there was pressure, that I'd be disappointing people, or that I had to pass this on a communal level. I had one case with someone who was very, very close with me, who asked, was in a seminary where they were reading, and I, you know, when asked my opinion, felt that she should not be yotzei her mitzvah in the seminary, and I really, in part of me, would have preferred if she didn't even go. But I understood when she said she felt like she'd be mamish making a statement in a way that would make it uncomfortable with her friends or even maybe the head of her seminary if she didn't go because everyone else was going. Okay, you go. You heard Megillah reading in a shul anyway, but you know you went or something like that. And maybe that year you're in seminary, but I don't think in this particular person's case that's going to affect the rest of her life. But again, if Rav Aaron looks at me and thought something was mutter, even if I'm not so personally comfortable with it, but again, in the sources, it's like you don't even need to be Rav Aaron to come to the conclusion. But there are obviously other factors, which he weighed in his case. Part of the machlokas is, well, did he mean it only in this case? What would he have said 40 years later? Did he mean it in shuls? And there I think you might have some debate. Okay, shugayach.